Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
TalkSTL.com, Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 235, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Well, that title is just long enough to go with that intro.
I know, right? Like, it's
just long enough.
It just keeps getting longer, but not girthier.
Well,
for whatever that's worth. So,
to each their own.
Yeah, so let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Dan and
this is Joe.
This is Kevin and ditto.
And this is Tom. And we have a guest this week.
Hey.
Since we're talking about a Harry Potter movie, we brought on...
Does he have the invisibility cloak on? Because I don't see him.
Well, yeah, sure, why not? But we brought in Jim Hill from Jim Hill Media, a Disney blogger, and theme parks and Universal. It keeps growing, right, Jim?
Are we back to the girth joke?
Well, at least that way expanding would be a compliment, yeah. Right?
Jim gets it. It's cool. Jim gets it.
He's like, I can play in your cesspool. So Jim runs a very popular blog about Disney and Universal and theme parks and cartoons and all that sort of stuff. And so you were on for Maleficent?
Yeah, I think so.
Right? Yeah.
Right.
And so, and then our Skype setup shot craps. And so you were back. So, and we appreciate that. So,
not a problem.
I guess just to refresh your memory, what we do is we basically just kind of treat the movie like a book club and we just kind of go through the storyline and have a conversation. So just feel free to jump in. At will. I know that since you're on Skype, you're not in the room. It's a little hard sometimes to gauge the flow of the conversation. So we will do our best to provide gaps for you to jump in.
Not a problem.
Cool. Joe, you are our synopsisizer, so we will let you.
So I think I came into the Harry Potter world way later. I think they were coming up on Deathly Hallows Part 2. Before I even started.
Wow. Okay.
That would be later.
So yeah. At the end.
Yeah. So it, later.
I'm there with you. I came in, I think, at about the sixth movie.
Okay.
So like I'm...
I feel like maybe I saw seven in theaters. Part one and part two in theaters.
I saw all in theaters, but then I didn't... It was actually Prisoner of Azkaban. So the third one.
Yeah.
When I saw that movie, I turned around. I'm like, okay, I want to read these books because... That movie, like the first two movies, I was kind of like, eh, they're a little Christopher Columbus.
Right.
But the, you know, they're just like a little soft. And even now when you watch them, you're kind of like, eh, okay. You can't,
they're kids' movies.
They're scannable.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
But when the third one came out, I was like, whoa, okay, I want to read the books.
So I did the audiobooks.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't think of that.
I don't think anyone's shocked by that.
Nope.
Nope.
this is based on a book that Harry Potter reads in the series, right? Like that's it's a textbook.
They If I'm remembering correctly, J.K. Rowling wrote this book, and I want to say A History of Quidditch, and they were actually written as fundraisers for yes. British charities.
Ah, yeah. Okay. So this is based on a novel as well?
Well, just the notion of they get referenced to constantly in the seven Harry Potter books. So it was just sort of like people kept asking her questions about, you know, these books. And she's like, all right, hell, I'll write them. And, okay. But again, with the money going toward this charity.
I gotcha. So this is like the Harry Potter version of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Of sorts. Yeah. But it's just what's kind of intriguing about this, you know, is, you know, up until this point, she hasn't adapted her own stuff to the screen. That it's been other people who've taken the books and broken them down into, you know, I mean, taking these 500 and 600 volume things. In fact, I think by the time we got to the seventh book, it was like, got to cleave this thing in two. You know, there's no way. In fact, I blame her for all of these, you know, like The Hobbit being three parts long.
Yeah.
We do too. You're not alone there. We've brought that up many times.
Although that's kind of stands so far as the only example of that worked.
Yeah, it was the best one.
Artistically, yeah.
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 Well, okay. You know, I always feel like, you know, someone at some point has to, you know, in Peter Jackson's case, in fact, he's gearing up for another film now that'll be out.
Is he doing Silmarillion?
Yeah.
Is he doing that?
Evidently the film between, you know, evidently he takes a 10-year break before he circles back to Tolkien. it's like his version of King Kong, which is twice as long as the 1933 original.
Yeah.
It looked good, if I remember right. Like, visually it looked good, but that was a boring movie.
Well, the other thing, supposedly, is that if you actually cold-bloodedly watch that movie, that, you know, it's one of these things where it's like, was this animated by gamers? Because it's like every time you introduce, you know, like, for example, the Brontosaurus chase section, you know, they do the equivalent of a flyover. So it's like, okay, you're familiar with the layout? Okay, release the Brontosaurus. You know?
That's
and
pretty
it's
good.
Just, it's one of these things where it's like, it's a movie, all right? And it's like, at one point, you know, I can't imagine Peter sitting at his desk and I know what people want. They want to see Kong on ice.
Yes.
It's just like, get to the Empire State Building. Have him fall off. I have to go to the bathroom. I mean, it's 2.5 hours in at that point.
He had visions of all that Disney on ice money dancing
that's
in his
right.
head.
That's
he's
right.
like, look how much money they're raking in.
I could do that too. So, yeah, we're introduced to Newt Scamander, who is on this quest to come to the States. He's obviously from Hogwarts. He's from England. He's coming to the States to he's on a mission. We don't really know what his mission is right from the get, just because, you know, they're trying to build his, you know, we don't know anything about these characters. So these are all, because I don't think he's mentioned in the original stuff either.
Yeah, he's the one that writes the book.
I mean, like, I don't think that he's a character. I don't ever remember him being talked about in the Harry Potter stuff.
Just the book.
Other than being the author of the book.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a year one.
Yeah.
That's for you, buddy. Yeah. He's in New York and he goes to...
Oh, we should also mention this. So that the little book that she wrote about the Fantastic Beasts, it's like 100 pages and it's not a story. It's like a reference guide. It's like a...
Like what he was writing?
Yeah, in the Harry Potter world, what she released, there is no story, there is no adventure, there is no romance, there is no... So this is a completely original story.
Oh, I see, It's like a reference... Yeah, it's like the Marvel A to Z type of thing.
Yeah, right. And just to fill in some cracks here, published in 2001, and it benefited Comic Relief, so...
Oh, really?
The two of the books
that's still
actually,
around.
Oh yeah,
Quidditch through the years. Is that what that was called?
Through the ages or through the something that? Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Quidditch through the ages. Yeah, that same thing. Just both were written to benefit Comic Relief, or that's where the money went to.
So this is like a loose adaptation. It's a jumping off point in the character name, but I mean this story is
completely original.
So no one going into this has ever heard this story. They can't look at it and go, "Oh, that's not like
wrong.
The book, or the book was better." I mean, this is a complete original work.
I think I've discovered
this is the expanded universe.
Yes, yeah. There you go. I don't like Eddie Redmayne.
Yeah, I don't have, care I have, for him I, either. Like,
I thought, you know, we saw him in what did he got the
Jupiter Ascending?
No, but we got, like, he got the Oscar nom for
the Stephen Hawking thing.
Uh-huh. And that was whatever. And then he was in Jupiter Ascending, and we're just like, what are you doing?
And the Danish girl,
Jupiter Ascending. Everybody I asked that question as to what they were doing. Yeah. The Danish girl. But I think I've come to, I don't like him. Like, I'm just not a fan of his at all.
I know what you're saying. He has a weird quality about him. And I'm not saying he's a bad actor.
He just came off kind of douchey.
Yeah. He came off so douchey.
He's not, I don't think, it's hard to say, like, I don't think he's a bad actor. Like, these characters he plays, I don't think that his, you know, his method, his acting style is bad or anything like that. But it's just him.
Stephen Hawking's kind of a douche, so it works.
Right, Stephen, that makes sense.
I hate to say this, guys, but again, I know you guys sort of cuffed the Chris Columbus films, the first two of the Harry Potter, but, you know, there was an establishing of the world there that I know was kind of spoon-fed to the audience.
Yes.
And more to the point, you know, you didn't find yourself when Daniel Radcliffe or Rupert Grint or Emma Watson, for that, when they're talking, you understood what they're saying. I mean, I hate to say this, you know, in fact, when Nancy and I watch Doctor Who now with Peter Capaldi, I love his performance, but I have to leave on the closed captioning because his accent is so thick that there are times when he'll say something and it's like, oh, okay, oh, that's what he said. And with Redmayne, I mean, when I was watching the movie week before last, I almost just like, could I please have the captions?
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of this dialogue of what he's saying is crucial because, again, they're establishing this world, and I couldn't understand really about a third of what he said.
I think also there, as this movie, this opening scene where you're getting, they're introducing so much stuff to you so
rapidly.
They're
giving you all of your characters right then.
Right.
They're introducing you to every single one of your main characters in the matter of 5 minutes, 10 minutes maybe.
And I normally like it when a movie just kind of hits the ground running, but it was like it had so many threads it was trying to pull together that I was like this better pay off,
right?
And I will say overall I felt like it kind of did,
sort of,
but it definitely,
I was not a huge fan of this movie. I'm just gonna say that right off. I was not, I don't think it was bad. I thought it looked good,
right?
I thought the creatures looked cool. There's a twist that I liked,
right?
But overall, I was just underwhelmed.
When you give the shapeshifter character the same haircut as the mysterious villain,
well, I wasn't going to throw that out there right away. But all right,
well, yeah. I mean, it was when you see the opening scene and there's some villain, they don't show his face, and then they cut to another character that has the exact same haircut, which is a very odd, you know, shaved head, longer.
That's not that odd because if we're at the time. Yeah. I feel like that haircut is reminiscent of the time when the movie was.
I just feel like they showed some shots of the other character, and we don't spoil. Yeah, but they showed the shots of the other character walking away from the camera, and I'm like, that's the same shot with the same haircut. I'm like, is that supposed to be foreshadowing? Or
well, I will
not,
say, I don't remember the last time Colin Farrell played a good guy ever.
Well, I mean, saving Mr. Banks, wasn't necessarily a villain.
Seven Psychopaths, he wasn't a villain.
Oh, I guess he wasn't a bad guy in that. In Bruges? I don't know. Like, now you're just naming random Colin Farrell movies.
Yeah. I mean, he's no who's the guy? I can't think of it, but...
Ben Foster?
Jason Statham.
Sure.
My reaction to this was, first, I was like, it's a little odd to experience this world without having any... Like, it's all adults.
Yeah, there's no
kids. So at first I was like, okay, I felt like I was trying to acclimate to the adult magic world,
right?
And
the wands are girthier.
I was like, I'm just gonna go ahead and leave that there for Tuff.
I have to ask, did you guys see it in 2D or did you do the 3D?
I did it in 2.
I did it in 2D as
two.
Well.
I can't even remember, honestly. I think 2, if I have my choice, I would choose 2D.
I was going to ask, well, were you wearing glasses? But you're always wearing glasses, so it doesn't help.
Because I have to say, Nancy and I caught the 3D IMAX, and you know how films are already dark to me?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Especially this one.
You're staring into the murk of the magical world, and and this is already, you know, Depression era, or excuse me, 1920s era, you know, New York. So it's already a lot of gray to begin with,
yeah.
And
think they were harkening back to the golden age of radio. There's just there's no picture for you to watch.
That's right.
When I saw it in 2D, though, I had the same reaction.
I did as well.
Of this movie is so dark, how could it possibly work in 3D?
Well, and that's our main concern. That's the reason I don't like 3D. I like it at home because the technology is better. But when you go to the theater, that's one of my main problems with it is that you know, you just can't see it because it's already dark and you put the dark glasses on. And
but this I think this is by design too, because there's one scene in the movie where I even like mentally I was like, hey, make sure I remember this, yay for me, because there's a scene where like he's in the like interrogation room and every character is in a flat or muted color or almost grayscale, and Eddie Redmayne is in like he's the only thing that pops of color, and I was like, so I'm assuming maybe that's
I'm sort of
subtle motif that he's.
I just think Warner Bros. Is doubling down on the dark and gritty. I was like, hey man, it worked for Man of Steel and it worked for Batman versus Superman.
He was the only thing that stood out in that scene. Like everything else was flat.
I don't think that this was necessarily like a decision to make a dark and gritty movie like a Batman though. The setting. I think the tone of the film, the look of it was very true to the time, and like I think it was a good choice to film it like that. Like it would have taken you out to be, you know, 4K bright and colorful, like the muted colors and everything really worked, like and looked like an old setting.
Aside from the darkness, Jim, how was the actual the 3D? Because I was curious about that. There was even a couple scenes where I'm like, I think that was really nice for the 3D audience. Yes.
Right. Well, again, you know, they put in the time and the money. I mean, you know, for example, what is it? The Thunderbird. You know, those scenes. Yeah. And you know, the slow motion bank stuff. It worked, but at the same time, it was one of these things where I think you guys nailed, you know, one of the real problems with this is an introduction to the world. Newt is kind of unknowable, at least in this first film. I mean, the whole notion of he, you know, eventually, by the way, how spoilery are we going to get here?
As spoilery as you want.
Okay, well, you know, that's the whole point of supposedly the reason he came to the United States was that he had one of the, you know, a surviving Thunderbird. And, you know, he was going to, the story that they laid out was that he was going to take it back to Arizona and release it there. And, you know, where it's, you know, part of the, you know, Native American mythology, you know, literally the Thunderbird. And, you know, and then, of course, the big bad, the bad haircut you referred to, you know, that's what Gellert Grindelwald, you know,
that's the initial bad
turns
guy,
out to be, if you know your Potter mythology, he was, you know, a friend of Albus Dumbledore, basically in their childhood, they had a falling out that was actually caused by, what was it? He accidentally kills Dumbledore's sister.
The sister, the one that's in the painting.
Yeah, and so that's the other thing that I think what I find fascinating about this is that, you know, when you see the movie, you eventually discover that you've been looking at Grindelwald, you know, practically the whole film, and more to the point, they've hired Johnny Depp to play this part.
Well, I knew that they had announced that Depp was going to be in whatever sequel, because it's not going to be called Fantastic Beasts. Right. It's going to be called something else.
And they also said that Eddie Redmayne or Newt may not be the main character.
Dumbledore is what I would guess.
That's the thing. Eventually, you know, if you actually drill down into, you know, the Harry Potter history, where this film series is going is that there's supposedly, you know, it's been mentioned in the books, there's a wizard's battle between Albus Dumbledore and Grindelwald that supposedly happens in 1945 that is, you know, fabled to be the greatest battle between wizards in all of magical history. And that's where this film is going. What's kind of interesting is that supposedly, what's his name? The gentleman who actually plays, you know, Dumbledore in the movies. He's desperate to be in this movie, you know, in the series. He so enjoyed playing the characters.
Oh, Michael Gambon?
Michael Gambon. He's flat out said that, you know, if this is where you're going, I want back in. Hmm. And
I thought it was going to be the guy. Like, I thought I read that it was the guy from Legends of Tomorrow, DC's Legends of Tomorrow, the guy who plays Rip Hunter.
Well, I thought it was from Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Huh. This is where it gets a little bizarre, because there was the we're making three of these movies plans.
Sure. Yes.
And now we are in the we're making five of these movies plans.
Oh,
and,
five now? Holy oh, man. Cow.
Well, especially based on how much money it's making.
That is true. Yeah. And still making.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it
and
shows no signs of slowing down.
Where this gets genuinely, truly bizarre is that, you know, I don't know if you guys saw, I want to say it was back in July after The Cursed Child opened in London, that Warner Brothers grabbed a trademark for the yes. movie version of A Cursed Child.
Which they deny that they're making a movie of, right?
Well, but here's the interesting thing. I actually heard from a friend at Warner's, and if you want to talk about a truly bizarre conversation, in Cursed Child, McGonagall is a character, and Maggie Smith is 81 years old.
Yeah.
If they stick with the timeline, I mean, we're talking about this series won't wrap now till what, 2024?
Yeah, they have gone past Marvel at this point. I mean, with the Harry Potter stuff, the Harry Potter verse, they've gone past Marvel at this point.
Yeah.
And I think Marvel's cutoff was 2020, I think, is where that ends. So they've gone 4 years past that.
You know, I mean, where Fantastic Beasts will end in, you know, 45 or thereabouts. I mean, it won't necessarily click into directly into, you know, the Harry Potter films. But, you know, there'll be enough of a connective tissue. Mm-hmm. You know, in fact, I honestly would be surprised if we don't end up at Hogwarts, you know, eventually. But then on the other side of this,
I think, you know what, I was just thinking, I think we're probably going to end up there. And it's, I mean, they're mm-hmm. going to lay it basically right at the feet of Tom mm-hmm. Riddle.
Yeah.
Coming into school.
Right.
With a sorting hat.
No, that's it. Exactly. Yeah. And then when you factor in that. The conversation that I'm hearing about Cursed Child is they want to do a trilogy.
Oh, my
God. Lord.
They bring it back to Maggie Smith. Evidently, there's this conversation with the representatives about if we script the – and in the play, I guess McGonagall's only in it for two or three scenes. Hmm. And it's like, would Maggie agree to come in and shoot her scenes?
Before she dies?
She's alive?
Yeah.
Could she do it right now?
81 now? And it's just sort of like
they're just going to de-age her like they did Michael Douglas and Ant-Man.
I was going to say they're going to Jeff Bridges her.
well, remember this is Ron, Hermione, and Harry as adults. In fact,
that's right. I guess they wouldn't have to. That's true.
No, that's, you know, if anything, it's like, all right, shoot her to the cheesecloth. No, it's and that's evidently the other part of the conversation that they've reached out to Watson, Grint, and Radcliffe, and just sort of like, okay, this is sort of a handshake deal, and in 10 years' time, will you be willing to come back? And
wow. I'm sure they're both like, well, at least maybe the guy who played Weasley. Ron's like, yeah, man, whatever.
Oh, I think that they were part of those movies since they were kids.
Yeah, but Watson and Daniel Radcliffe have a career.
But it doesn't matter.
I would agree, but like they all seem to have such affinity for the property.
That's probably
true. And they owe this property their careers.
Well, Daniel Radcliffe, somebody had asked him about it, and he had specifically mentioned Harrison Ford came back. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
we saw how good Crystal Skull was.
No.
Oh, to Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why he was talking about Han Solo.
We're talking about The Witness 2?
Yes.
Well, and remember that supposedly how they got Ford to come back for The Force Awakens, that, you know, part of his deal was, I get one more shot at Indiana Jones, so that's not how it ends.
Right.
You know, so I don't know. I mean, what's fascinating for me is that this is Warner Brothers, you know, quintupling down on this franchise. Yes. And meanwhile, on the theme park side of things, Universal has snagged the rights not only to the Fantastic Beasts films, so those characters and that mythology will be popping up in their parks, but evidently there's part of this deal is also Cursed Child. So, you know, we're going to see all of this stuff, you know, going to be able to walk into this world really, really soon.
Yeah.
Also, I have to believe because they've screwed up their DC stuff, their comic book stuff so bad, is they have to double down on something else. You know, like they have to.
Actually, they're going to dumble down.
I see what you did there.
Don't let me show you the door.
There it is. But yeah, I think hearing all of, like, if we're saying that there are at least 8 more films in the works, they realize, look, we've mucked this up over here. We got to get something else.
Well, this is their tent. I mean, this is their tent pole. This is their cash cow. I mean, they've never screwed up Harry Potter to this point. You know what I mean?
They do have the sort of the well.
And I would say, even though I didn't love this movie, I wouldn't say that they screwed it up.
No, absolutely not.
Like I was watching almost the appendices to the beginning of a series of movies. And I did. I was like, I think the head fake here is that we all think that this is going to be the Newt Scamander movies, and I don't think that's what they're doing at all. No. I think it is. I think J.K. Rowling was probably like, how about this? We'll start there. Yeah. That's great. But I've got this other idea, and I think it's going to be all the way into... And I think we're also going to... Because of that, she's going to be able to explore Dumbledore's sexuality, which she's talked
about. She's openly said that
said he's gay. Because I was wondering if this becomes the Dumbledore story, we're going to have the first kids movie with a gay romantic interest.
That's possible.
Storyline.
That's absolutely possible.
And wasn't... Am I wrong, but wasn't there implication that Grindelwald was the significant other?
I mean...
Am I making that up? I thought...
That was that fanfic that you're writing, actually.
So I guess back to this
back
one.
Back to the movie itself.
So Newt is in New York. He goes to like what is kind of like the magic version of... Ellis Island, where he checks in, and or no, I guess it's the normal version.
No, it's not magic.
Yeah, it's not magic because he switches his case to a muggle worthy.
Yeah.
So he goes and he's kind of making his way through New York, and this is where we kind of get introduced to your female love interest, who I can't think of her name, but you also like this guy. At one point, I felt like they wanted this. I can't remember the actor's the same. Like he's been in a bunch of stuff, but he was always kind of like the funny fat guy.
Dan Fogler.
He was in Fanboys. Yeah. He was in Balls of Fury. He was in Take Me Home Tonight, which is actually not a bad
movie. You know what happened?
No.
Josh Gad.
Josh Gad is the better version of Dan Fogler. I think what they tried to do is they tried to make him like the new Farley and the new like Chris or Kevin James.
Yeah.
And like he's funny. He's a good actor. When you try to pigeonhole a guy, like, no, you're this version of this character. Like, we want you to be this, like, the fat, funny buddy. Yeah. But is what we want.
They only scrape the surface of that here. I thought
they give him a little bit to do.
There was a little bit of the, kind of like fall down, go boom jokes.
Right.
But then they kind of backed off. Yeah, I thought this was very out of character for Dan Fogler.
They toned him down.
This was not his Balls of Fury and that
he
other
wasn't
stuff.
Kevin James.
He wasn't. No. Yeah. I liked him. At first it took me a second because I was like, wait, is that, that's the guy from the ping pong movie?
Balls of Fury.
Yeah. And I'm like,
the poor man's Jack Black.
I said poor man's Kevin James.
And I said poor man's Josh Gad.
Yeah.
I think the problem is he's good, but he's not as good as all these other people.
I don't think you
can
compare him to Josh Gad because to me, Josh Gad is like that triple threat.
Yeah.
Where he can be funny, he can sing, he can do all that stuff.
That's why you compare him to him because that's what I'm saying.
But this guy doesn't sing.
No, but.
But the irony is he's the Harry of this movie. He's the one. This whole world is new to him. So he's constantly the one who's goggling at the magic or the suitcase that you can walk into or
trying to not
the,
picture the sister naked before she reads his mind. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was funny.
Well,
like,
he's the exposition delivery.
Right.
Or he's the one that they're delivering it to so we understand what's going on.
Exactly. So they kind of bump into each other at the bank.
He wants to start a donut bakery. A pastry shop. Yeah.
And which I thought was a funny scene where he's just like, no, look at all of this pastry.
And apparently
who in their right mind would eat a pastry out of a guy's suitcase?
And apparently he imports his suitcases from England, wherever he's from.
Yeah, they're the exact same suitcase. And I was like, oh, I've seen this before. I know what's going to happen.
Well, yeah, as soon as you see them carrying the same suitcase. Right. What are the chances, though, that the one guy's from England and the other guy's in New York and they have the same
MacGuffin?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what it is.
It's an international city, Kevin.
So, a magical suitcase at that.
New York City is a magical place.
Yeah,
Tom would know. Especially at the holidays.
Just a guess, huh?
Just a guess.
Just a shot in the dark.
Yeah.
So they switch suitcases on accident. And of course, Newt has to figure out how to get back to the other guy, whatever the other guy's name is.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we've got this girl who works for
like, oh, Mustard Lip.
Yeah, Mustard Lip. I don't think that's what her name in the movie was.
I'm like, just, you got something right there. I'm like, just wipe that.
Where she works for the American version of Hogwarts, I guess.
No,
where
it's, just no, like, it's not a no, school. It's like the CIA.
It's like,
the,
like it's a government like agency.
It's
yeah.
like the police.
Yeah, the Magical Congress of the United States of America, yeah. MACUSA, yeah. supposedly.
It's the Ministry of Magic.
Yeah, oh, yeah, and she is supposedly a disgraced auror. She got
booted for something that we'll find out later. While all of this is going on, we get another sub-thread.
She got booted for spilling mustard all over the important case files.
Come on! Where we get Ezra Miller, and you've got like the...
Wait, what?
Ezra Miller?
Ezra Miller's in this?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the bowl haircut.
That's Ezra
Miller. Oh my gosh, that's Ezra Miller? Yeah. Okay, that really weird kid.
Uh-huh. Credence.
Oh my gosh, that is...
Poor man's Crispin Glover.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. Yeah. That's exactly what I thought.
That's so crazy. That's him. I mean, I saw him in Perks. I know he's going to be the Flash.
Now you can...
Yeah. I can't believe...
After this performance, can't wait for that Flash movie.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. But no, that's interesting. They really did a good job, I think, of like the hair and covering him, because I just didn't
notice. Where so they kind of have like an Oliver Twist kind of thing where the leader of this den of children like sends them out and is like anti-magic, and you know, there's passing out flyers, and he's, you know, part, I guess he's like the second in command, I guess.
It's like half Fagin, half Westboro Baptist Church.
That's exactly Fagin. That's pretty good. That's exactly what it
God
is.
God hates Fagin.
Yeah, God hates Fagin. So then we get another sub thread where we've been introduced to Colin Farrell, who's like this massive detective, very good detective in the ministry,
mm-hmm.
Where he is searching for this child, but you don't really know why. You don't really know what's going on with this child. So he has enlisted the help of Credence.
So you have the Westboro Baptist Church and then just the Catholic Church.
Yes, the Catholic Church. That was a little creepy.
Yeah, okay. Did anyone else think that they were hinting on?
Absolutely.
Okay, because they were, like, Colin Farrell would go and, like, touch him and be really close with him.
They were, like, forehead to forehead, nose to nose.
Yeah, right. As soon as that happened, I was like, is he having a relationship with this young child?
Well, and if what Dan is saying is true, that makes sense. Like, if
it does?
Well, yeah, if Dan is saying that Dumbledore and Colin Farrell's character were a couple,
and this is really Grindelwald.
Oh.
He would maybe use a broken child to his advantage.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
You know, like that makes sense now.
Yeah, I just know what they're going for there, because it's hard for me to separate. Like, when I think of Harry Potter, I know that they're young adult books, but I generalize and I go, they're kids' movies, because, you know, kids are going to go
see them.
I
think 1 and 2 are kids' movies.
Well, but I'm just saying the series is, I wouldn't call them adult movies. I mean, they're for everybody, but I think of them as, you know, kids are going to these, right? And so, like, I just lump them into kids' movies, not the quality, not the materials just dumbed down or anything. But so when I saw this movie, I'm like, well, you know, kids are going to see it. It's in the Harry Potter verse. And I just thought the tone, the darkness, and then some, I was like,
I have to believe that much like a Disney or a DreamWorks movie where they throw some stuff in for the adults as well.
Yeah.
You know, to keep them entertained. Mm-hmm. Like, not saying that that's what they did here, but I could see them using, like, as adults, we get that that plot, like that underlying.
But this movie, this is PG-13, right?
Yeah.
This is a dark.
Dumbledore was in love with Grindelwald.
There we go.
There you go. Okay.
There it is. Been confirmed.
Yes.
To Harry Potterpedia.
Yeah.
Harry Wiki.
But I was just surprised. And again, I mean, I know that these movies are not just for kids, but you know they're going to go see them. And as I was watching, I'm like, wow, this isn't like a little kid's movie. I mean, it's pretty dark. The abused, the children getting abused.
Yeah.
And things.
When there's a scene where like the headmistress of this home is just like, take it off. And I was like,
Take this belt off.
What are you doing? Oh, good Lord.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's late night. Yeah.
So she, like this other gal who works for the ministry, who's been disgraced, finds out that Newt has released these beasts into the city, and they have to clean it up as fast as they can. So they bring Newt in to the president.
And the ministry's job is basically to hide magic so the public doesn't know that it exists.
Right.
But they totally ignore her, though, because they're trying to find Grindelwald.
Which also, like, I will say, there's that comes up later in the movie where she's like, and you're just now telling us. And I was like,
yours, lady.
That was frustrating. Yeah,
bitch, she was trying to tell you, but you wouldn't listen.
Yeah, that was frustrating because I realized she was busy, but she did dismiss her. And there's no way she doesn't remember dismissing her.
Right.
Like, so, yeah, I was
she
like,
had him with her.
That's crappy. Yeah.
You know, like he was with her the
you
whole time.
You don't remember when I walked in with that guy next to me and tried to get you and you said, no, we're busy. Yeah,
get out. And you're like, all right, see ya. Yeah. That's not on me, Miss President. That's on you. Yeah, so they I'm trying to think.
It was weird that a government agency had created the head position and called it president.
I did think that was weird.
I felt like this is really like written by an English woman because it's I don't think an American would have ever
called themselves the president.
There's no other presidential position in any government
unless you're
office.
I was like, you know, the CEOs, but
yeah, but
right,
that,
no,
that,
yeah,
that's,
that doesn't count,
you know, that's secular.
Yeah, right,
you know.
Yeah,
that's interesting. I never really thought about that.
So
but they're not part of the American government. I mean, it's a
they're in
wizard,
America,
but it's a wizarding, you know what I mean, it's a wizarding entity. It's not like they're related to the U.S. government, right? No one knows about
I guess maybe it's so not. I took it as a government agency.
You have to remember, if you read the books as opposed to watching movies, I want to say it's after Goblet of Fire. There's actually a scene where the British Prime Minister, you know, that Cornelius Fudge actually appears before the British Prime Minister and kind of has to let him know that Voldemort is back and bad things are about to happen and he's about to lose his job. I mean, I think, again, you can remember this is one of five. I think there'll be more of the world, you know, as we go further into the next four films and more to the effect that, you know, we'll see, you know, whether or not there is some sort of connection. I mean, face it, the film all but, you know, set up, you know, the whole New Salem thread where, you know, the notion that, you know, sort of gave the insinuation that, you know, America is this sort of backwater where we fear magic. And, you know, that you can't help but, you know, I mean, it's sort of like if you mention Dumbledore in film one, he's got to show up by film four or five. And likewise, if you introduce a plot thread like New Salem, it's like, you know, we're in Chekhov country. You can't talk about a gun in act one and have it not show up by, you know, act two. So
I thought when they mentioned him and I was like, oh, well, either that's just a reference, like a throwaway reference for the fans, or that's going to come. That's coming. Like,
yeah,
I did not
have to meet up.
I knew that there were other movies, but I did not realize that they were all going to be tied together.
Yeah.
So now knowing that they're tied together, obviously that reference is almost like when you see Doctor Strange's name on a board in Civil War or whatever, you're like, oh, well, obviously we're going to get that later.
I think that's the new business model for Hollywood.
Yeah.
No, like little, no, absolutely. Little, you know, drop that you're trying to get people invested. What was the joke that somebody made this great joke about the presidential election? You know, it's like, you know, the third Hobbit movie. You don't want to watch it, but you're here. So, you know, you've come this far, you know,
you've already invested. You're invested at this point.
Yeah.
They realize that Newt is kind of the only one. Every time I say Newt and I was just like, yeah, let's watch Aliens.
He's
Gingrich, yeah.
Which kind of sounds like a Harry Potter name.
It does,
about it.
Newt Gingrich, yeah. I could see him being, you know, part of Slytherin.
Right.
Absolutely. So she realizes that Newt is the only one that could kind of put everything back together. So they kind of break
away. Because it's his crap.
It's all his stuff.
She's like,
but
you're going to go.
He's also like, because the Americans are killing the beasts, like they don't want them around. So where Newt is just like, don't kill them, like I'm trying to study them to, you know, I'm writing this book that will help you better understand these creatures.
Yeah, they fear them, where Newt is going around trying to save them, like they're endangered species. And he is trying to save them, and we later go on, do we know where that's located? He goes into his briefcase and that is back home in England.
No, I just think it's his briefcase.
And
it's just magic.
Yeah, I thought the briefcase was like maybe a portal. I didn't think they
were. It's like Hermione's purse.
Oh.
It's like the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, you could accept the fact that Doctor Strange has a window that goes to the Himalayas, but the fact that Newt has a case that
well, those are or, those are two different things you just
or
mentioned.
The tent,
but
when they went to the Quidditch World Cup, they got they had the like tiny little janky tent, and they all yeah. walked inside, and it was like this, you know, multi level.
Oh, okay, so you, well, that's what I, my question was: is it a Doctor Strange teleporting somewhere, or is
no.
it in
it's
the brief?
Just, yeah, I think
so
it's
all
just,
those animals live inside the brief. Okay,
yeah,
interesting.
That was my impression.
Yeah, that's yeah, how I took Menagerie.
I couldn't tell if it was a portal or a, you know what I mean.
The,
I
just, the, yeah. Here, let me sum up the movie in a nutshell. Is Men in Black meets Dr. Humanji.
That's a good... yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Yeah.
That's about what this is.
Okay.
Interesting note. Oh. The date of Grindelwald's duel with Dumbledore coincides with the downfall of Hitler's empire in Nazi Germany.
Well, he does have blonde hair.
So... And there's, like, this rumors of Grindelwald's Nazi ties. So
oh, okay.
That'd be interesting. Man. If they go that way... Then this is
like that's a
this movie is like a complete head fake of yeah. what they've got in mind.
Well, then, you know, the weird thing is there have actually been a couple of books. In fact, you know, it's really the Bedknobs and Broomsticks business plan. I mean, the whole, you know, it's always been this weird thing of history that Hitler made it all the way to France and never crossed the Channel. And why is that? And, you know, the thinking, you know, there's been a couple of great stories written where to the effect of, well, it was magic, you know, that you oh. know, that the English was, you know, home of Merlin, you know, that's, you know, and it just, he could not cross to, you know, that isle because the English was protected by magic.
Yeah.
And so.
Interesting.
If that's the route they're going to go.
That would
I
be kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be a fun story to hear.
Yeah,
so she realizes that she has to get Newt out to help. So she takes Newt home with, what are they, Nomaj.
That's what they call a muggle.
That's a muggle, yeah. is the American version of a muggle. So they go and they meet her sister who is just like walking around in a slip. And she's just like, can you put some clothes on? And she was like, oh yeah, sure, and puts clothes on.
And meanwhile, Joe's like, no.
Yeah, leave, no. Just stay just like that. Please don't read my mind.
yeah.
I don't think we need to read your mind to know what you're thinking.
But I did like where she's, you know, he's our comic relief is looking at her, and she was just like, "No, it's fine." Like, guys, that's the first thing guys usually think when they see me, anyway. And he's just like, "What? I don't know what you're talking about." And she, you know, we find out that she can read minds. That's her mutant power, I guess.
And she can channel the spirit of Adelaide from Guys and Dolls.
Yeah, right. That's exactly, yeah. So it turned, you know, again, to give our comic relief a love interest. Like, she is this amazing cook because she can do all of this stuff with magic, and she makes this amazing strudel, like apple strudel, and you see it being formed.
Yeah,
like,
she said pyre strudel.
Yeah. And I was like,
I know.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, are we going back to the Dumbledore Grindelwald?
Is that what we're doing right now? Yeah, all right. Very good. They stay at the house at this, which I always like the boarding place where you're not allowed to have men upstairs, but somehow you manage to sneak two guys upstairs
ever
in your
since
room.
Was a buddies, man. Right. Been like, they still have those.
That's still a thing. Probably not now. I guess probably not now. That thing doesn't exist anymore, right?
Oh,
home, I guess.
I don't think so.
The last time I snuck into a boarding home. Yeah. Or a way bid. It's been a while.
Yeah.
The Susan B. Anthony Hotel for Women.
Yeah, right.
That's where they lived on Bosom Buddies.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So Newt, Newt wants nothing to do with anybody. Like, he wants to get out immediately and go find these other creatures.
Yeah, he's a loner. He doesn't want to work with anyone. He's really kind of, and I think that's
he's
all.
He's a loner. He's a rebel. Don't get mixed up with a guy like him, Dottie.
Don't do that.
What?
Well, I hate to say this. I think the arc they're setting up is this is a guy who, you know, relates, you know, obviously really well to animals. And you've got to remember, again, this is set 1920s, 1930s. This is when, you know, if you went to an American zoo, you know, it's just the notion of, sure, let's throw a lion in a cage that's 8x8. You know, that you know, this is the way Rowling works. She grounds things in what the actual history was at that time. And I think over the course of these films, what we're going to see is, you know, particularly if they're setting up the romance with Porpentia, I guess that's the name of Tina, the
oh,
auror.
Okay.
She's going to, you know, soften him. You know, they make it easier for Newt to connect with actual people as opposed to just animals.
But if we're not going to see Newt again, what? Who cares?
We don't know.
Well, you know, but that's the thing. I honestly think that Newt is going to. It's not a question of we're not going to see Newt again. It's just that we're bringing other characters onto the page.
I gotcha.
Like a Dumbledore, mm-hmm. you know, from the 1930s or thereabouts. So
okay, he'll be back.
And also his whatever relationship with Lestrange, who I'm assuming is maybe
it's her sister or her mom.
Yeah, no, that's it exactly.
You know, is it her sister or her mom?
Mom, I would guess. Because this is older, and, so
right. Yeah, it's 45 years before, so it's probably. Okay.
I would guess her mom,
maybe.
Yeah, either way. So this is where we get a pretty good scene of Newt and comic relief guy running around.
Kowalski.
Running around New York trying to catch the beasts. Like, I think there's one beast where he steals shiny things.
Niffler,
which I thought, like, it was like a little platypus.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cute. Like, that was fun.
That thing, I just was like, God, stop it. Like, he just screws up everything.
I do like when he, like, grabs him at the bank and he's just, like, turning him over. And it's almost like that scene with Frank the Pug in Men in Black where he's like, no, it's fine. They've got an act thing going on. It's cool. Where he's just, like, shaking him out.
Hilarious. They do that a few times. He has, like, his own little briefcase universe because in his pouch is he can fit unlimited jewels and gold.
Stuff. And I was like, don't shake him out. Just take that stuff with you. You could use that to get home.
He's not a thief.
Oh, he's not a thief. So they catch most. This is when they actually get arrested because they break into.
Oh, and point of information, J.K. Rowling has revealed that the next Fantastic Beasts movie is all about Leta Lestrange.
Oh, well, there we go.
Huh.
I feel like they're doing...
So they're planting that seed.
They're like, hey, you know how Marvel did these movies with one character at a time? Let's just go ahead and do that again.
Yeah.
Like, we...
and they'll all come... And it'll be the Avengers in the last one.
Yeah, that's right.
In the first installment, the mysterious Leta is mentioned when Queenie catches a glimpse of the framed picture of her in Newt's office. Although not much is revealed, we find out that she shares some kind of difficult history with Scamander and that she certainly has played a very important part in his past.
Well, yeah, they definitely... They reference that where they... Everybody gets away. They get into Newt's case and the sister sees the picture and she accidentally reads Newt's mind and she realizes there is a friendship there or something more than a friendship. We don't know.
It's a troublesome.
Now they have been, they are all under arrest from the ministry. So our female lead and Newt have been captured, and this is where we get Colin Farrell has kind of like tilted.
Yeah,
is that right? Is that the right?
Yeah, he kind of he pivots because at first you're kind of like,
he's kind of a good guy, but he's a hard nosed good guy.
Yeah, he just seems like he's investigating,
right?
You know, and they don't really portray him as doing, he doesn't necessarily come off as any sort of villain. No,
he just kind of comes off as like a hard nosed.
And then he does.
Yeah. Looks like they might be setting up a little twist-a-roo.
So they go in front of the ministry. They are both sentenced to death.
Yeah.
Colin Farrell's character immediately takes Newt's case.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that inside the case are these things called the Obscurus,
yeah,
which is like
they call them Obscurus. They also call them Obscurials or something.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe the Obscurus is when it's attached. Either way, there's these pieces of like dark magic that have attached. Like from what I understood, it was just like it's magic that has been suppressed.
Like it attaches to a host.
Yeah, and that when someone with magical powers has to suppress their magicosity,
they become this magicosity.
Yeah, that's a word now.
Okay,
and that basically it turns dark.
Would you like an actual explanation of what they are?
I feel like
It's fine.
Yeah, I think Tom's is perfect.
Go ahead.
Okay. This is from insider.com. Fantastic.
Very reputable.
Yes.
Yeah.
A new dark magic introduced in Fantastic Beasts may explain one of the biggest mysteries in Harry Potter. The big new magical concept introduced is the Obscurus. An Obscurus is a type of magical parasite that forms when a wizard or witch suppresses their magical ability.
So exactly what Tom said.
If they don't perform spells, it's as if their magic turns inward and eats at them. Obscuruses eventually take over their host bodies. The parasite itself is called an Obscurus, and the person whose body is used as a host is the Obscurial. If they're not controlled, an Obscurial can become extremely dangerous.
So also what Tom just said.
So it's wizard blue balls.
You got to alleviate it, otherwise it goes back.
Right. Honey, I could die.
Yeah.
Honey, I could die.
I don't think you understand the amount of pain I'm in right now.
Right. Like this.
No.
I think everybody at this table, in all fairness, we've been in that situation more than once.
Just the tip of the wand. That's all I'm asking. What?
No, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
So, moving on.
So it turns out that Colin Farrell knows that there is one of these Obscurials somewhere close. He's seen it in this vision, and he knows that it is close to Ezra Miller. So he has tasked Ezra Miller with finding this Obscurial so that they can...
It has to be a child.
They say that once they get to 10, they die.
Yeah, and Newt.
And Newt has tried to save one. Like, this girl got to like 8 or 9.
Yeah,
and
she was 9.
I think he detached her, but he couldn't save her.
Right. And that apparently is, yeah, because it's referenced in part of the, you know, the
backstory or whatever.
Well, when Colin Farrell's got him and...
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
So as we're going forward, it turned, like, they think that this girl that has been by Credence's side the entire time.
Radita Herring?
Yeah, I think that's what her name was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is the Obscurial.
Yeah.
Turns out, shocking, it's not.
Nah.
It's Ezra Miller. Ezra Miller, who has somehow lived past 10 years old, which they never really explain. Like, I think that's like, how did he...
Well,
how?
I think partially because of the environment that he was brought up in, which was
super suppressed.
Yes.
Yeah, I could see that.
And he's an orphan, you know, so, and he's an older orphan.
Right.
So he's like at a point where he's just like,
a
zombie.
One of the other things they're doing is they're going to kill Newt and the female lead. And when they do that, they kind of... The amount of glee that those women were taking and like getting ready to kill them.
Yeah.
Like where she was like, no, it's going to be great. And she like,
doesn't that look good?
Yeah. Takes a little happiness out of. No. The amount, like, she's grinning from ear to ear, looking forward to killing her.
I thought it was to make her feel more comfortable.
No,
you don't.
No,
think
she
so?
Was like, this is fun. And like takes the happy memories. And then we get to see why she was at, you know, kicked out of the inner circle is because she met Credence. She knows Credence, and she actually beat the crap out of John Fogerty. Yeah.
Right.
Which was a weird reference. I didn't expect him to show up in this movie,
especially because it's the 1920s.
Correct.
Yeah.
Where she beats the crap out of this headmistress because she is beating up Credence, which immediately, like, not immediately, but I was like, well, then why would you have any, unless Credence has magic, why would you give a crap about a muggle, so to speak? So Newt and the girl get out, like they get away, and this is there's a huge fight in the New York City subway system where Credence reveals himself as the Obscurial, and Newt kind of has him, like Newt's got him kind of subdued, and he's talking to him, and he's, you know, becoming friends with, like, trying to gain his trust. And then all of a sudden here comes Colin Farrell, and like initially I thought he was just doing the cop thing.
Yeah.
Where he was, you know, where he was trying to, you know, look, I'm really sorry. I should have trusted you, and, you know, trying to get him closer. Then all of a sudden, these other cops show up
the ministry.
Yeah. So like our female lead has him under control. Like he's coming back. He's almost like a Galactus cloud.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of what it is. Or a parallax cloud.
Or the smoke monster.
Or the
from
smoke
Lost.
Monster from Lost. Sorry, Dan.
Thanks. Thanks for keep going.
Yeah. So he starts to reform, and then all of a sudden, they just open fire.
Yeah.
And just kill
him. This is the old trope of, hey, what is that strange thing? It's probably dangerous. Let's shoot it.
But then they said,
freeze.
Yeah. But Colin Farrell says, don't, like, if you shoot him, you answer to me. And then immediately they're like, yeah, it's cool.
And that's pretty much how every movie that tackles some kind of a monster or threat. Shoot it.
We'll figure it out.
Shoot it, whatever.
So they end up killing Credence, we think. I don't think they've completely killed Credence.
Right.
Because there's that scene at the very end where you see like a little piece of black mold, I guess, and, like, floats away. But it was like it floated away under its own power.
Mm-hmm. How do they kill it?
They just shoot it. They just shoot him with their wands.
Bleach.
It's we didn't hear like any spell casting, so we can't say.
They just fire lightning bolts out of their magic wands.
It wasn't one of the unforgivable spells.
So Newt kind of said, you know, he reveals who Colin Farrell is, and no surprise to anybody. I was kind of surprised that it was Johnny Depp. Like, I just thought Colin Farrell was going to be the bad guy.
Yeah. Right.
So they do, like, a
Did
reveal.
Did you hear that Johnny Depp was in this movie?
No, I didn't. I knew that he had signed on for the next...
It's, like, all over the internet.
Because it leaked.
Johnny Depp is Grindelwald.
I was in the same boat you are, that I had heard that he had signed on to do the next couple.
Right.
But I didn't go in thinking that news came out because of the cameo in this.
I had no idea.
It really ruins it because, I mean, had you not heard about it, that he was going to be in this movie, you might not have thought the head fake. But for me, since I knew it going in, and then I saw the back of the head, and I saw Colin, I'm like, it's the same. It's got to be him. It ruined the experience.
I had no idea.
And this is the second time that those two have played the same character.
Was it the Parnassus? Yeah. Dr. Parnassus?
Yeah. I was like, oh, good. Jude Law is going to pop up.
I'd be all right with that.
Yeah.
So they reveal that Colin Farrell is actually Grindelwald. He's been there the entire time. He's been manipulating everything. And it's revealed to be Johnny Depp as well. So this is, our movie's wrapping up, and Newt has had like this venom from this magical spider beast that he couldn't really fit. It has other properties besides being a venom. And he realizes that if it's delivered via rain or via water, it will erase your memory, much like the flashy thing from Men in Black.
or a Superman kiss.
Or a Superman kiss. That's right.
So rather than go around and kiss everybody, he decided he would go with the
venom. He just flies and turns the world backwards.
Yeah.
That would not, you know, rip everything off the surface of the world.
We don't talk about that.
I just rewatched that. That's tough.
Yeah,
like I love that movie, but it, there are some things where I was like, "What are you doing?"
It was 78.
It was 78. That's true.
It's a product of the time. You have to remember that because it does not hold up.
Some things do, like that whole. Never mind. So he sends the Griffin or the Thunderbird up in the air, and he releases on. So all of New York forgets what's happening, except for our other buddy,
Kowalski.
So. You know, Kowalski has obviously fallen in love with the sister, but he realizes that, like, I can't stay.
He's not a part of that world. Like, he'll never. He's never going to fit.
It's also illegal at that time. In the states to have muggles and magical relationships are illegal
from the wizard side. They don't. Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Got it.
Which obviously that changes, but at the time
it's a taboo.
Yeah.
So he kind of accepts the fact, and he walks out into this rain and forgets everything. And our characters kind of go their separate ways. Kowalski ends up getting bumped into by a random stranger and gets left behind this case of silver.
Yeah, he's going to his work at the cannery.
It's from the bird or whatever.
Yeah,
they
the bird snake, whatever that thing is.
That was so weird. So the little tiny thing that he holds at one point grows because they grow to fit whatever area they're in.
Yeah.
It grows into this huge gigantic thing, and then I didn't realize at first they were the same thing, and then it turns back into this tiny little snake.
He jumps into like a teapot.
I needed a teapot.
Yeah. It was cold.
Right. Yeah. What did you expect?
Well, it happens.
That's a thing.
So shame in it.
Yeah. Women know about shrinkage, right?
Right.
But
what's shrinkage?
Is that huge one though the same one he held from the hatched egg? I thought maybe it was the same one.
But he gets this case of they're hatched out of silver eggs, 100% silver eggs. So he takes that to the bank and he gets his bakery. And this is like the sister comes back and they meet each other again.
That was a cute little scene. I mean, I knew they were going to end up together somehow. And I'm like, they go to the baker. I'm like, oh, guess who's going to be a customer?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That was a help wanted sign.
Oh, that's a good call too.
So I figured maybe that's
and
what
I like the fact that
to.
Part of the reason the shop was popular is all his pastries look like
correct
creatures from the movie.
Yeah, so he got like the little plaid up. Yeah. He's like, where do those come up with? Where do you come up with those? He's like, I don't know.
Delicious beasts and where to eat them.
That's right. That's the name of his bakery. So then they, you know, Newt and the other gal kind of have their interactions. where it's pretty obvious that they're kind of into each other. So, and Newt kind of takes off, and that's kind of where we wrap this movie up. Again, like, I wasn't... It wasn't bad.
Doesn't he say at first, like, I'll write you, and then he's like, well, can I come back and...
Well, he was like, maybe. I'll send you a copy. He's like, how about I give you one in person anyway?
Yeah.
You
know?
So it was fine.
Yeah.
Not a great movie.
Well, no. Remember, though, the one thing that's going on there is, you know, that the very book that he's talking about, you know, the textbook that this whole series is based on, he's going off to read this, and when he comes back, he's the famous author of the book that becomes, you know, a textbook in the world. So, you know, and you know, so there's that thread that'll get carried into the next couple of films. What about the John Voight character?
I forgot about the John Voight character.
Yeah, because again, you have to assume introducing this U.S. senator who loses a son to, you know, the Obscurus. I mean, there's that whole scene where, you know, there's a rally and, you know, he gets killed in front of all these people at the rally. And and he's got the younger son who actually at one point brings in what's her name? The woman who's behind the New Salem movement. And
well, he also brings in the Obscurus.
That's exactly. Yeah. So it's just one of these things where it's like you have to assume that thread's going to continue through, you know, and again, you know, likewise the relationship with Tina.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of this film was like, hi, this is a chessboard. This is a pawn. Yes. That's a queen.
Yeah, for sure. You're definitely right.
It's set up.
That's what made it a little rough. Like, this movie, to me, felt long. It wasn't as enjoyable as watching the first Harry Potter, you know? It just was a lot of information. I felt like it dragged on a little long. I did enjoy it overall. It's just that I think it really was hurt not having the background of the book. So you've got this beloved franchise, and also they're very good kids books with great characters and everything, and so going into the movie you already had that fan base and you kind of know who Harry Potter is, and they had all this stuff to build on. This one they had to make it all up for this, and so I think that hurt it as far as like going into it and everyone's learning, you know, all at the same time, and it's just a lot to take in a couple hours.
I agree, and in fact I think the thing that you got to remember that with the, you know, the Harry Potter films, you know, I mean, face it, these were set at Hogwarts, this wonderful, magical castle environment. Whereas, you know, I mean, face it, this one is set, you know, basically at the magical equipment of the DMV.
Exactly. You don't have as much wonder. I mean, when you're at Hogwarts, you're learning about magic pictures and magic hats and Quidditch and all this stuff.
And you're seeing it through the eyes of children. Yeah. Right.
Right. No, yeah. That's it exactly. Yeah. And here it's, you know, depressed adults.
Yeah, that was the biggest, you know, sort of like detachment issue I had with this was like, and as much as I, you know, kind of like in hindsight, look at the Christopher Columbus movies as being like, compared to the rest of the series, they do a good job of sort of like sticking to young, wide-eyed wonder.
Yeah. The qualities, the fun qualities. Yeah. He does a great job of presenting the fun and the magic.
And this, you know, and everything's sparkly and shiny and magical. And this is definitely like, Jim's point, it's like, well, man, how long is this line?
I think Roland would have benefited from working with a screenwriter.
I think that's possible.
I think
for
sure.
But again, who's going to tell her that? She's J.K. Rowling.
Yeah. Sure. She's the one who basically said, I'll make this 5 movies. Okay.
And if you're an executive orders, it's like, why are we stopping at 5? You know, just sort of like, you know, and in fact, it's interesting. I was speaking with somebody at Warner's about this, and they flat out said that, well, look, one of the things we took into consideration when she delivered this to us was that, well, face it, the Potter fans, the kids who started reading these books in the late 90s are now young adults. And
that's
so
going to happen to Beauty and the Beast.
The material, if they actually made another movie like Sorcerer's Stone or, you know, that sort of thing, it would almost be kind of insulting to them. Yeah. So that it was like, you know, this sort of thing, it's that much more sophisticated, that's more adult, and we're following along with our aging Harry Potter audience. And it's just sort of like, it's an interesting choice, but it is also a gamble. Like, I'm actually kind of intrigued to see when they do the next film, whether or not there's more, you know, some pressure, something similar to what happened with Dawn of Justice, where it's like you make the next money or you make the next movie funny and entertaining, or we're coming to your house and hurting you.
Oh, I was going to say, Dawn of Justice wasn't funny.
Yeah. Now, Jim, the last time we had you on, you had actually even alluded to the concept of eventually rebooting the Harry Potter series, like on cable. That's something that you brought up.
Yeah, and the weird thing is that this is now the battle plan. This, you know, Fantastic Beasts and Cursed Child is the way to go, and that now has been pushed back to a reserve point. I mean, it just, you know, though, to be fair, given that, you know, HBO, you know, between Westworld and Game of Thrones, it's like, you know, it's not like we actually need something right now.
Right.
You know, we're kind of covered. But yeah, they were, you know, they were crazy for that idea. But it just, again, nobody anticipated that Potter would turn into this thing that would survive the movies. And in fact, you know, just in the time since we last recorded that show, the fact that, you know, NBC Universal, you know, made this huge deal. They actually stole the Harry Potter films away from Disney. They've been showing them endlessly on what used to be, what is it, ABC Family, now Freeform. And starting in 2018, that's NBC Universal property. In fact, they're going to start showing them on the Sci-Fi Channel, which I think is going to be a real interesting fit.
Well, that channel isn't what it used to be.
No, like not at all. No. And maybe that's part of you know, the long vision of what they're going to do. But they scored the film rights to Fantastic Beasts. They've and as I mentioned earlier, you know, the you know, and all of this stuff is going straight into the theme park. So it was this one comprehensive deal, and you know, and that's the weird part is just that nobody these days looks at these movies as movies. You know, that they are, you know, this IP that is very carefully tended and supported. And believe me, you know, that's, you know, in fact, what's his name? Eddie Redmayne was talking about, he hasn't even seen the screenplay for number two yet.
I was like, for this movie? Because,
you know, because he's not in it.
Well, that's it. You know, he's as much in the dark as anyone, you know? So then I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see this going forward. You know, it's, you know, they're already crowing about how well it did in its second weekend against Moana.
Yeah, but so this is in its second week of release, and it made $45 million, which is only $10 million less than Moana, which opened. And it just crossed $500 million worldwide. So in 2 weeks, it's made $500 million. Fantastic Beasts. So, yeah, that's the power of this franchise, and this is exactly why Warner's is doing this. Like, to harken back to what we were talking about earlier, I mean, Harry Potter stuff is on fire, whether it's the books, the play, the screenplay.
Yeah, a lot of people were disappointed when they didn't realize that it was like, it's a play, so you're reading a script. Yes.
Yeah, well, those people So, but I mean, like, this is obviously a multi-billion dollar franchise and IP. And
unlike their Warner Brothers' other multi-billion dollar franchise, it's not universally reviled.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah, it does seem to be working.
Isn't that weird, though? Like, it's just like, I don't...
Yeah, I know. People aren't seeing it
in spite of themselves.
Like, they're I saw it 3 times.
You ding dong.
So anyway, I guess that's it for this episode. We will go around the table and everybody can say where to find themselves.
This is Dan. You can find me on Twitter at DanGraney67, GRANEY.
This is Joe. You can also follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at KevinRBracket.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. And Jim, where can they find you and all your wonderful product?
Several street corners. It's really kind of sad. What is it? No, Jim Hill Media. I'm in Huffington Post, and I forget what the Twitter handle is, but by the next show, I'll know. So, you know.
That's a good plan. So,
Jim Hill will return in.
Yes, and also, don't forget, you can find us online at on Twitter at Real Spoilers, or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers, where you can go and join the League of Show Sharers, which I didn't get to this episode, but I will get to in the next one. I have everything ready to go. So that's it for this episode. Coming up on the next one, Jim Hill will join us once again, and we will tackle Moana. And until then, Tom Riddle is Voldemort.
Of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.